United States v. Mitchell, Mitch Nalala.
May it please the court. I represent John Mitchell, and I also represented Mr. Mitchell at sentencing, where the district court erred when it applied a two-level unduly influenced enhancement under the statutory rape guideline. The court erred for two reasons. First, that enhancement itself does not apply to attempts to influence behavior. Second, it does not apply in the situation of an undercover sting operation where the victim is not a teenager, but rather an adult male inspector or agent posing as a teenager.
Could I just stop you for a moment?
Sure.
And I guess I will ask the United States to respond to this too, but I couldn't find anywhere in the record where the district court made specific findings regarding which part of the defendant's conduct or language constituted undue influence.
There were no findings,
okay.
Your Honor. There were no findings made. In fact, for us, that demonstrates just how difficult it is to do in a case of a sting operation like this. We do not dispute that the guideline itself applies to attempts and to sting operations. The question here is whether this particular enhancement applies to sting operations. And it's important to go to what the purpose of this enhancement was for. This is a statutory rape guideline. It covers consensual sexual acts. The commission punishes more severely in a separate guideline where there's forcible sex. This enhancement, then, is intended to punish those situations where that consent is essentially been overborne. The will of the victim, her will, was overborne by the participant's conduct.
Well, how do these cases work where you have a real victim and the government argues for the enhancement? So what kind of evidence is presented?
I believe what would be presented, we could look to the civil context, Judge Posner, where we look at a testator and we look at
I'm asking what happens. Aren't there any cases involving the enhancement with a real victim?
No, there are not. The Root case is the only case to address this enhancement. That's the 11th Circuit, where two members of the majority held that it did apply in the case of a sting operation, and that did not involve a real victim. There is no case addressing this enhancement. But the commission tells us what to do. It directs us and says in the background to the commentary, it says that we look to see the participant's conduct, whether or not that compromised the voluntariness of the victim's behavior.
I mean, what the government is arguing is you look at the conduct of the defendant and you ask, is it the sort of conduct that would unduly influence the victim?
You don't need
a real victim to make that judgment, do you?
You do for this enhancement, because
why?
The commission says that it's a voluntariness standard. Mm-hmm. By putting forth that standard, they have articulated a subjective test, and they require that we do that from the perspective of the victim. This enhancement itself requires that we go to the perspective of the victim.
But that makes hash of the provision that a 10-year age difference establishes this amount of persuasion.
That is a rebuttable presumption, Your Honor. The phrase unduly influenced is actually a term of art, and it requires, the next layer requires, that there be a completed act. By using that phrase, the commission chose to require that there be not just mere efforts to achieve a result.
There are separate questions that I understand you to, separate propositions I understand you to be making. One is that you need a completed act, and the second is that since this is subjective, it couldn't possibly occur where the victim isn't a victim, but is an agent or a computer program or something like that.
Right.
I thought we were dealing with the second one of these, your subjective argument. I don't see how that's compatible with the rule that a 10-year age difference is enough by itself to satisfy the undue influence standard.
That 10-year age difference can be, the presumption that comes up there can be rebutted by a defendant. And in the case of a stinger operation, we could not do that.
I think it can be rebutted, but the question I'm asking is, doesn't this show that the standard is objective rather than subjective? completely objective criterion is enough by itself. Now, maybe what has to be done to rebut is also objective, to show that the age difference wasn't used in any way.
What has to be done to rebut it, Your Honor, is to look to whether or not the victim's conduct was compromised, whether her actions were voluntary. That, by its very nature, has to be a subjective analysis to determine whether or not the presumption can and should be rebutted.
I don't see that voluntariness can be the standard. I mean, suppose the undue influence were done according to Ogden Nash. That is, candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker. And the person 10 years older than the victim gives her a glass of wine. She's still incapable of engaging in voluntary activities, but I assume that would be viewed as undue influence.
Where the victim is given a glass of alcohol and consumes it because someone gives it to her, that was undue influence.
But I hope it would be wine or liquor rather than just a glass of alcohol.
Your Honor, I'm not sure I understand the question. The commission said that they defined it in the commentary to the guideline. They say that the district court should look to the conduct of the participant and determine whether that conduct compromised the victim's voluntary behavior. It necessarily requires a subjective analysis, and I do understand that the presumption itself arising may be objective, but determining whether or not it's rebutted is subjective. The commission knows how to draft.
So how is it rebutted, in your view?
In my view, you have to look to the victim, him or herself, just as you would to the testator. You look at the testator and you see, is this person, at the time that they changed their will, were they mental state impaired in some way? In the case of the victim here, the maturity, perhaps the past sexual experiences, and family ties and circumstances, those sort of background actions, and also whether or not they traveled, can show whether or not the will was overborne, whether or not they were persuaded by whatever the participant has done. The commission knows how to draft attempts, and I think it's important to look at the exact language of the guideline enhancement. It reads that where the participant has unduly influenced, in the past tense, the participant to engage in sexual conduct. The commission did not add an attempt provision here, as it did for the two other enhancements under the same guideline. Where there is a false identity used or computer internet is used, the commission says that these enhancements apply where there is a facilitation of travel for sexual conduct. That's an attempt. The government and the Root Court asked this court to write in an attempt provision where one does not exist. Now, the government focuses entirely, it seems, on the definition of victim in the enhancement. That definition is a general definition section, and there are two parts to that definition. It's whether or not it could apply. Victim means a minor under a certain age or an undercover agent. But that is a general definition section, and it does not go to the specific enhancement here and the specific language that the commission has drafted in telling us that this is a subjective test. I'd like to reserve my remaining for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Malala. Mr. Pham?
May it please the Court, Tu Pham on behalf of the United States.
No specific findings here.
At the end of the sentencing hearing, there were no specific findings, Your Honor. I cited in footnote 4 of the government's brief the colloquy between Ms. Malala and the court regarding the Root case. And what led up to that specific colloquy was, I believe, three pages of argument by Ms. Malala regarding her client and regarding her case. And trying to distinguish the Root case. And in response to that, Judge Hart essentially jumped in and said, well, do you agree that this is the same as the Root case? And the defense counsel at the time said, yes, it's the same factual situation. She's just disagreeing with the holding of the Root case.
But that doesn't constitute a factual finding by the court.
Surely
you wouldn't argue that.
I don't believe that you're correct. I don't believe that there was a specific factual finding where Judge Hart went methodically through the facts of this case to outline.
Well, the problem I have with your case is that when there's no actual victim, it is very difficult to rebut the presumption.
Well, the presumption can be rebutted, Your Honor, even in a sting operation. For number one, let's say hypothetically, unlike this case, you had a situation where a defendant, a participant, was online and typed in, "Hey, my name is John, where are you from?" And the undercover agent says, "Chicago, would you like to have sex?" "Yes." "Okay, where, when, let's go." I think that's a fairly abbreviated factual situation, Your Honor.
No,
but under this situation, it could be rebutted.
I can give you an even better case where the defendant says, "Hi, I'm John, and I'm 14 years old." Okay, that's fine. But the problem is that the ordinary mode of rebuttal would be to point to characteristics of the victim. Say, "Yes, she's 14. But she's very mature, she's sexually experienced, she's had other dealings with older men, et cetera, and therefore, the blandishments that he used would not have influenced her." It's the test, the will contest analogy that your opponent mentioned. Without the characteristics of the victim to invoke, it's very difficult to rebut.
Your Honor, it may be difficult to rebut, but certainly not impossible to rebut.
Well,
and
what difference does it make whether it's difficult or impossible? The fact of the matter is that what this does, the rule you're contending for, gives the government an incentive always to use, the virtual victim, because that'll get you the enhancement every time, virtually every time.
Well, and that may be the case, Your Honor, but with respect to
the fact... So what's the sense of that? And the other problem I have with your case is just the concept of influence, or the notion, the word influence, implies some actual effect on someone.
Well,
you can't influence a person without actually having a causal effect on the person's behavior. That's what influence means. And you can have influence, undue influence, if you don't have an actual child victim. So I don't think the enhancement is designed for this case. It doesn't use the right words, already the 10-year presumption puts the defendant behind the eight ball, and if there's no real victim, going to be almost impossible for him ever to rebut.
I was interested in the fact that you argued that defendants should not be treated differently based on the victim they happen to pick. In your example, a mature versus a naive 14-year-old. But we do this all the time in criminal law. A mugger who mugs and accidentally kills an eggshell scold victim is punished more severely than a mugger who mugs a sturdy, healthy person. You take your victim as you find her.
But Your Honor, the result of that would be that, the government would submit that the purpose of the enhancement would be that certain defendants are posing a greater risk or greater danger.
Yes, but it leads to all sorts of goofy results. I mean, Judge Rovner was alluding to the vulnerable victim enhancement.
Right.
Now, could you have a sting operation in which the agent pretends to be especially vulnerable, and then you get the vulnerable victim enhancement, even though there's no vulnerable victim? Is that your position too?
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know the answer.
Well, what do you mean you don't know? The logic of your position, you insist, that sting agents are to be treated as real victims, is that all the ordinary, all victim-related rules in the sentencing guidelines should somehow be applied even when the victim is an agent.
Well, with respect to this specific guideline, Your Honor, there, the victim is defined to specifically include undercover agents, and there's and the sentencing committee, you know, specifies why that's important in this case, and why the enhancement, why the definition was extended.
Things can be used for all sorts of different crimes. So there's a general principle that you can have a victim who's not a real victim. But that's different from an enhancement that seems to be based on the sort of peculiar idiosyncratic features of the victim. It's a vulnerable victim, or she's very young, something of that sort.
Even the root majority would disagree with the government's argument on this point. The majority specifically stated that the voluntariness of a real child victim's actions would be dispositive if an undercover agent were not involved.
Well, that is correct, Your Honor, and that's right, because the commentary to the guideline indicates that, and the root court said that would be dispositive in the case if there was a real child victim. But then the root majority goes on to say that in the case where there's not a child victim, that doesn't necessarily exclude the enhancement application where there is no real victim. If there's no language of exclusion, that if one applies, it necessarily means that the other definition of victim doesn't apply. There's no language to that effect. And likewise, I know the cases are not completely analogous.
I think your argument would be stronger if the agent here had pretended to be 10 years old, you know, or 11, because then it would be extremely difficult to imagine what kind of rebuttal would be possible. But 14 is kind of borderline. You know, there are a lot of sexually active 14-year-olds who would not be subject to undue influence by the kind of conduct in which Mitchell engaged. So it seems to me when the agent chooses an identity which is in this kind of borderline area where rebuttal might be possible, then the choice of this sting means that because you don't have a real victim, rebuttal is going to be virtually impossible.
Well, it depends on the facts of the case, Your Honor. I mean, as I said before, in the hypothetical,
but you don't have facts when you don't have a victim.
Mm-hmm. Well, as the root majority pointed out, you can look at the defendant's objective conduct in the case to determine whether that conduct.
No, but that's where you have trouble with the word influence. What does it mean to have? Suppose I told Judge Rovner that if she didn't give me her necklace, I was going to murder her. Now, objectively, that would be the exertion of influence. But suppose she said, "Well, I care more about my necklace than my life." That would mean I have not influenced her, right?
Two extra levels for Judge Posner for exercising undue influence.
That's right, Judge. But no, with respect to I guess the argument is that the principle of the guidelines and the thrust of the guidelines is that we have defendants who engage in the same type of conduct, objectively, the same type of conduct, and fortuitously, whether that defendant, in this case Mr. Mitchell, happened to hit on an agent or happened to hit on a 14-year-old real victim shouldn't distinguish his sentence under the guidelines.
Yes, but if he'd hit on a real victim, he might have been able to rebut because she might have been not a typical 14-year-old.
Well, or maybe he couldn't, but even if there's a virtual victim, an undercover agent, the defendant could rebut in that case as well.
How?
By pointing to the differences between,
well,
for example,
the, what
in this case,
if the real 14-year-old would have been someone who had been a prostitute for the last 4 years? Then he'd have a very powerful rebuttal.
Yeah, under the facts of that case, automatically. Oh, yes, sir.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Sam. Ms. Malella, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
Ms. Malala, before you begin to argue, without the enhancement, what would the guidelines give us?
Oh, Mr. Mitchell would be two levels lower at a 20, he was at a 22. May I grab my notebook?
Yeah.
He was at a 25, with acceptance removed, he was at a 22, so that was 41 to 51. So you had a level 20, 33 to 41 months. He was sentenced to the low end of 41 months. He'd be at a level 20. Unless there are any other questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And you were appointed. Well,
yes,
you're the
federal defender.
And we thank you for the undertaking the defense here. So court will be in recess until Monday.
Till Monday. I have to come back.
Okay, this ends.